News Podcast for the week of March 12th, 2013. My name is Chris Moran. I'll be your host and moderator for this week's roundtable discussion. I'll be joined in just a bit by Adam White and Brian Yancey. We'll be talking about all the fun shit we posted on punknews.org this week. And we're also going to feature some good music from Great Thunder, Comadre, and Brutal Youth. Before we go ahead and jump to the roundtable, we're going to go ahead and actually get into one of those tracks right now. This is John Gentile bringing you Great Thunder. We'll be back in just a moment with the roundtable, so stick around.
Ghouls, this is the Track Keeper, and I'm here to bring you some more frighteningly good punk rock music. You know, winter is over, so that means it's time for some spring screaming. Today's track comes from a band called Great Thunder, which includes Allison Crutchfield of P.S. Eliot. They've got a new album that is about 20 tracks of all different types of genres, similar to Guided by Voices. You know, I'm Guided by Voices myself, and they all say the same thing. Kill. This track is called Bird Bath, which is my second favorite kind of bath, after a blood bath. So here's the track, but don't wait up for me. It's springtime and allergies are acting up, so I'm off to get my shots.
Ready, aim, fire!
Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. Again, Chris Moran here, host and moderating this week. I'm joined first by Brian Yancey. Welcome, Brian.
Hello, hello.
And joining us from the great Arctic White North, Adam White.
Woo! Yo, Punk News! I can't do it.
Yeah. I'm still reeling from our spring break party last week, so if I'm a little more subdued than normal, don't mind it.
This is going to be like the Sleepy Time podcast with O'John on it. So
I love that. Yeah. I love that I can hear ice clinking in the background. That just like warms my heart.
Yes, that's me.
Oh yes. All right, it's probably me too.
All right, guys, we're doing it
in concert.
What are we drinking here, Adam?
Okay, this is totally not my thing, but I have it, so I feel that we should be using it up. And I'm not a rum drinker, really, unless I'm like, I guess, at a resort or something, and that's what they're serving you. I have rum, so I'm just like, well, someone's got to drink the fucking rum, so I'm drinking the rum. I'm actually drinking the rum mixed with ginger ale, and I don't know if that's gross or not, but mixing things with Coke is not my thing, so that's what this is. You know, I wish it was rye.
I got a really good rum recommendation in the liquor store a couple months ago. Somebody randomly told me that rum margaritas are really good, and I got rum and some margarita mix, and you know what? Not bad.
The thing about rum is that to me, rum is like the kind of thing I drank underage in high school. So I drank a lot of like what is it called? Like Appleford Estates spiced rum or something like that when I was in high school. So rum kind of reminds me of that. Like I remember at one point, or God, it was high school, or it was just like in university when we were just being cheap. Was like, I remember like getting on a bus and driving from, or taking a bus from like from Guelph to Waterloo, Ontario, to see a bunch of ska bands play in like a union hall. And I had like a big, you know, bottle of Coke that I had emptied half of Coke and was filled the other half with rum. And that's what rum to me is. And just drinking it casually, like my, you know, like my gentlemanly evening cocktail, just does not work for me. So yeah, I'm just using up the rum. That said, I have a bottle that my parents just brought me back from Cuba that's upstairs that I assume is better than like the shitty jug of whatever I'm trying to kill off right now. So maybe it's better rum, but probably. This one is not.
What about you, Yancey? What's in your glass?
I'm drinking some honey pepper whiskey that I also am trying to kill off because I got it for free from a work event. And it's not very well made. It's kind of cheap tasting, but again, it was free. And anybody who knows me personally or has ever met me anywhere, say at a music festival, knows that I'm not the type of person to turn down a free drink no matter what is in it or what or who is handing it to me. So that's what I'm drinking. I am out of good booze at my apartment, unfortunately. I don't know how it happens. You know, I buy a nice bottle of whiskey and it's gone in a couple of days. So here I am, but, you know, it'll get the job done for tonight. It'll keep me loose and conversational, which is what I want.
There you go. Well, I'm going with the old standby, which is vodka and lemon lime seltzer. So, yeah, that'll round up this week's What's in Your Glass.
My girlfriend drinks the exact same thing.
You know, and when I want to get a little frisky, I add some Red Bull.
Yeah, it's bad news. Bad news.
We used to call it Liquid Schwartz. Which is a good segue.
Oh my God! Really?
Come on! All right,
this is going off the rails already.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah. But on a more serious note, let's go ahead and get into some of the stories here. Starting things off tonight, we featured a story about a recent article from the one and only New York Times regarding a new band who are actually an Orthodox Jewish punk band. They're the main feature in a new documentary called Punk Jews. And just going to give you a little bit of what the Orthodox Jewish punk rock band's lead singer had to say about what they're doing. Quote, "It's very amusing to me to see the looks on other people's faces. Most religious Jews have never seen anything like this, so they have no idea what's going on. To me, Judaism is like punk rock. Real Judaism is very in your face. The world is chasing after desires for money and sex and drugs and materialism, and Judaism is the opposite. Judaism is like, this world is nothing. This world is only to serve God and bring light and redemption. To me, that's very punk rock." I don't know. Adam, thoughts?
I'm somewhat surprised at our readers on this one, only that they were really caustic about this, and that was somewhat surprising to me. I mean, like, I get why people look at one of these examples of where a religiously minded group is doing something that's aesthetically punk rock, and then that they're seeing that as being like, ah, you know, like our atheist backs get up, and we're seeing that as like religion is starting to encroach on our scene or something like that. And I kind of get why people are taking that hard-ass stand in our comment boards, only because we, and this, I don't know what this says about anything, but I think that a lot of us that kind of turned our backs on a religious upbringing, had come out of, say, a Christian background. And for a lot of people that have turned their back on a Christian background, the idea of there being like a really punk rock band that was also very Christian seems kind of antithetical. But at the same stroke, we kind of give a pass when we hear, have one of these stories about like, here's a Muslim punk band or here's a Jewish punk band or something like that. So I get why people are trying to point out the seeming hypocrisy in that. But on the other hand, if these guys are, you know, if they're Orthodox Jews and they're cool with being Orthodox Jews and they're not trying to, you know, encroach their views on anyone else or convert anyone else or anything like that, which I don't really think is a Jewish thing to do anyways, then, you know, all the power to them. Be a punk band. Cool. I don't really have a problem with it like a lot of the people on our site did. I mean, I think a lot of us, you know, like punk music because we like punk music aesthetically. We like kind of like loud, fast.
I think we may have lost Adam White.
Brian, I think we did.
You still there? Yeah.
I am still here.
Well, that's Canada.
I'm
for
still
you.
Here.
Well, yeah. Brian, go ahead. If you want to go ahead and finish your, if you want to go ahead and do your thought while I try to get Adam back on board.
Yeah, of course. While we navigate these technical difficulties, I mean, I pretty much agree with what Adam had to say about the.
There's that rumbling. Do you hear that rumbling?
I do.
Adam,
rumbling?
Adam, I told you when you came on before. I heard a rumbling.
Oh well, that's.
It's like you have a hand crank to turn your internet on.
Yeah. I don't know what happened there. When did I get cut off? I was making a fucking great point.
I don't know, but when I brought you back on, it was like it's like Thor had entered the discussion.
Ah, I was saying something insightful too.
Well, continue saying something insightful.
Well, I don't know where it stopped.
Well, make a point.
This is a super cribbed version of what I was saying. If you want to be in a religious punk band, whatever, cool. All the power to you as long as you're not trying to convert me to it. So, yeah. There we go.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's the really crappy version of a great point that I was making. Thanks, Skype.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with Adam's point, both the long version of it that got cut off and the short version of it. I think this is fine. I don't see the issue from a religious standpoint. This isn't a band that's like going out there and actively, you know, preaching their, I don't know if I would call it gospel, but you know, their religion to other people, you know, unwillingly so. And yeah, it's totally fine. And I think, you know, sometimes, especially in this day and age with the internet being a thing and comment sections of the internet being a thing, that you know, people want to put punk rock in this little box that it doesn't necessarily always fit in. And you know, when you have, you know, religious people playing, you know, loud and fast music, it, you know, it chafes them just a little bit. But I don't really think it's necessary on any front, you know, because I mean, who really cares? Like it's something that literally has zero effect on your life if it's not something you're into. So, I don't know. What do you think, Chris? You got any thoughts on this?
Yeah, as long as it's not the OC Supertones, you know, I'm not really that bothered by it. Which are like,
didn't they raise like $5 billion on Kickstarter for their record?
I don't know. I just remember.
I think they actually raised enough money to build one of those. They actually raised enough money to build one of those super churches, in addition to recording their album. So good for them.
Yeah, that's good. I will say I left out probably the best quote of this whole story, which is at the very end of the featured quote from the singer of the band, where he says, "Quote: Punk scream oi. Jews scream oi. In Yiddish, it's oi vey, oi this. In punk rock, it's oi, oi, oi. I saw it as a common ground for punks and Jews." I love it.
Yeah, I forgot about that too. That's pretty funny. I'm not sure that's necessarily relevant, but it's a really good pull quote.
It's a good way to end this particular discussion. So we're gonna move on.
Yeah, let's
move on to, yeah. to something that's near and dear to me. Not one, but two of my beloved hometown bands, that being Richmond, Virginia, have announced some new specific products. The first one being Guar. Guar has announced they have released their own Guarbecue sauce, which is quote, made from hot chick blood. Here's the quote they said about it. Guarbecue is mostly made out of blood of really hot chicks. It was a terrible waste of fine ass, but ultimately worth it because this sauce is absolutely delicious. The cool thing about this is each year Guar in Richmond does this thing called the Guarbecue, and it's just like a day long like barbecue music thing. It's really rad. So I'm fully supportive of any new barbecue sauces. Along the same lines, another one of our own municipal waste are going to put out their own beer. They've teamed up with Three Floyds Brewery to create their own beer called Toxic Revolution Stout Ale. Here's a little bit of what the folks at Three Floyds had to say about it. Toxic Revolution was born of relentless experimentation, ancient alchemy, and hatred. Hatred of uninspired, flavorless beer. Municipal Waste demanded we brew a massive yet drinkable American-style oatmeal stout, perfect for winter shred sessions. Black as night and creamy on the palate with fruity tropical hop notes and balanced with roasted and chocolate malt. 50 IBUs, 8.5% alcoholic beverage content. So, the two, barbecue sauce and beer brought to you by the fine musicians of Richmond, Virginia. What do you think, Brian?
It sounds like they would go great together, perhaps.
Yes.
Perhaps a nice food pairing, if you will. Though, this is cool, I always think it's pretty cool when bands kind of put their names on this sort of thing, because it tells me, especially in the case of the Municipal Waste beer, is that the backstory to that was probably, hey, we brew beer, we like Municipal Waste, let's brew Municipal Waste beer. And they contacted the band, and the band was like, hey, we like beer, we're in a party band, that sounds great. And that was the end of it, and it actually happened, and it kind of came together like that, which I'm always a fan of when stuff like that. You know, I love it when a plan comes together, especially if it involves heavy alcoholic beers. So, yeah, I'm all about it.
It's cool that it's with Three Floyds, too. I mean, like, I don't know a whole ton about the American craft brew scene or anything like that, but I was in Chicago a couple of years ago, and there was Three Floyds stuff everywhere. I know, like, the Alpha King was on tap everywhere, but then we at the conference I was at, a bunch of us got together to discuss beer kind of impromptu. And one guy brought this bottle of a Three Floyds beer called Dark Lord, which which I just looked it up to confirm the legend of this beer. Basically, they make this beer available one day in April at the brewery every year, which is called Dark Lord Day. And that's the day that you can get this beer. And it's like a Russian Imperial Stout, but the stout is brewed with Intelligentsia coffee and a bunch of other stuff. So it's kind of black and thick and evil. And it was cool. So yeah, Three Floyds. Three Floyds is great. I mean, Three Floyds, even if you look at like what they do imagery-wise, the kind of labeling and stuff like that they do, Municipal Waste is a pretty good fit for you know the image that brewery has. So that's a good pairing.
And you know, going back to the barbecue sauce, I forgot to mention that it's going to make its debut at an event that they're going to be hosting in Kansas City. Actually, they're going to be in Kansas City, which is one of many barbecue capitals in the United States. The event is going to be titled appropriately Meat and Meat, as in meat, you know, stuff to eat, and then meat like you get together. So, yeah, that's a good.
So people will be meeting meat in Kansas City.
Yes.
Presumably with barbecue sauce as an accompaniment.
Adam, as a Canadian, let me ask you this: are you familiar with the basic barbecue regions of the United States?
Oh, I am not.
Let me tell you real quick.
All right.
Just give you the lowdown. So you have North Carolina, which Virginia is sort of associated with in barbecue lore, which is heavily pork. It's really like it's an older method of cooking. It's more of the you know, not a lot of seasoning on it. It's more letting the meat and the smoke flavor it, and vinegar-based sauce. Then you get the South Carolina, which has just this fucked up mustard sauce. And a funny story is, heading down to a fest a few years ago, I think this was like Fest 8 or Fest 9, former Punk News editor Ben Connolly flew into Richmond to drive down with me. And him and I stopped and sampled this atrocious mustard-based barbecue, and it was disgusting. So anyways, then you have your Memphis style, which is more of a your classic barbecue sauce, if you will. It's a little bit spicier, tomato-based. And then you have your St. Louis, which is more sweet, also tomato-based. Then you have Texas, which is primarily spicy but more beef. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, Adam. So now you know, depending on the region you're in, what kind of barbecue you should expect.
You know what? For all the bad things that they say about you guys, you're right on a couple things, and I guess barbecue is one of them. So, yeah, good on you, America.
Which we stole from the Caribbean.
Well, I mean, yeah, what haven't we stolen from somebody else and made our own?
Exactly. We like to, you know, just take it and rebrand it and stamp our name on it. So, yeah. Good times had by all. Well, I don't even know how to segue this, so I'm just going to go into it. Justin Bieber, not somebody we talk about too much around the org.
But, he's not?
I know.
Oh, but, okay.
You know, he's a guy who's always in the news for something or other. And I think really he kind of crossed over into our world recently when him and Patrick Carney from the Black Keys got into it, had their little Twitter fight, whatever. Kind of like shooting fish in a barrel to me. But now, the John, and I'm gonna butcher this last name, but I believe it's John Darnielle. Is that right, you guys? Darnielle? We're gonna go Darnielle. We'll go Darnielle.
Yeah, that's fine.
From the band The Mountain Goats, he has posted a video on up on Vimeo, which, by the way, Punk News also has our page there. Check it out. Where he's really criticizing the paparazzi who kind of go after Justin Bieber. Long story short, he's just saying in the song, "Don't be an asshole. Leave, you know, you can cover Justin, but you know, don't harass him or whatever." I got my own thoughts on this, but I'm gonna kick it over to you boys first, Adam.
I don't know why people engage with anything about Justin Bieber online. To tell you the truth, I don't know. I don't have the comment on this, mainly because I haven't watched it, so I don't know why you put it over to me. So yeah, what about someone who's watched this video, Brian?
I mean, Chris summed it up pretty nicely. It's a fairly simple, like, 1 minute song in which the overarching lyric is basically "Don't be an asshole." So, you know, I don't really have anything to say about the song. I mean, I like the Mountain Goats. They've got a lot of good stuff, but you know, it's like a throwaway song that, this guy just put on the internet for, you know, for this reason alone, and nobody will be talking about it next week. So I don't know. I don't really want to, I don't like talking about Twitter feuds or Twitter fights. I don't really think anybody cares. For the most part, so it's a little disconcerting that we're talking about this, in my opinion. But
I've got my reasons for it.
Okay, what are they?
Well, number one, I mean, I'm sorry, but Justin Bieber isn't the only person that is harassed by the paparazzi. It's a pretty common thing. I don't know a lot about the Mountain Goats, but I think this is fucking stupid. I think it's an attempt to get attention for the band. I really do. And I think it's lame. It's really fucking lame. I mean, you know, if he was singing something just about paparazzi, okay, cool. But, you know, he knows Justin Bieber's name garners attention, and he's using this for that specific purpose. And I think it's fucking lame, and I think he's fucking lame.
Wow.
John Darnielle, I think you are lame. I'm sorry. I don't know the Mountain Goats. I don't know anything about you, but I think this is a really shitty attempt to get attention. And, yeah, I mean, you could have done this so much. You could have, there's more he could have done with this. You know, you could have made it, you know, paparazzi, leave people alone. But no, you threw Justin Bieber's name in there because you know it's going to get attention for your fucking band. So all I wanted to say was I think it's fucking lame and I hope it has the opposite effect.
I wonder if you really want that Justin Bieber attention, only because, well, as we saw with like the Black Keys drummer that pissed him off, he has this kind of hellish swarm of children that he can just direct at people who, just through sheer volume of just through numbers, none of these people individually are, you know, very witty or effective or anything, but you throw enough of them at a poor person and they just swarm like locusts and devour the soul of the individual. So I don't know why you'd want to put yourself into a place where you may have to interact with those people.
Here's why, Adam, because all it takes is Justin Bieber to do one little tweet saying, hey, thanks to the Mountain Goats for whatever, and suddenly, bam, they've sold a million copies of their latest record on iTunes.
The Mountain Goats have? I don't know.
I'm saying if Justin Bieber, if he was to see this and he did that, that's Adam, I'm proving your point. He has that kind of power to these fucking mindless children that, oh, these guys are nice to Justin, I'm going to check out their record. That's how mindless they are.
And maybe I'm buying way too further into it. Yeah, I think you might be. I don't think it's quite that extensive, just because, you know, if it doesn't have like some like canned pop drum beat over it, most of these kids aren't going to give a shit. But yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily true. I don't know if I agree that, you know, while this guy is certainly doing it for some sort of attention, I don't know if there's like some sort of like crazy means to an end that he's after posting this.
That's just, you know, a theory.
Yeah, he's like if you follow the guy on Twitter, like he's pretty funny. He posts a lot of really weird stuff, and I think, you know, he probably just saw this and was bored at home one day and decided to, you know, break out his guitar and write a quick song about it and then post it out into ether. I mean, he's not explicitly trying to make money off of this. Like, the song isn't available on iTunes as far as I know. So
I will give him credit that he didn't title this thing like "Leave Justin Bieber Alone" or anything. It's still like named for the image from wherever he recorded it from. So I'll give him that. So he didn't make it easily searchable.
That's okay. Fair enough.
That's as far as I'm going with this guy, though. John Darnielle, you're on thin ice, buddy.
Brian, you are tweeting bad things about Justin Bieber while we're recording this because you're going to incur the wrath.
That's fine. I don't care.
He wants the wrath.
I'm more worried about angering Justin Bieber fans than I would be about angering, like, Anonymous. Or, you know, what about, angry... What 4chan about, kids or something. Like,
I welcome the wrath. I want to see what they're made of. I feel like I can handle it.
Hey, Brian, who would you fear angering more? Justin Bieber fans or, and I'm not going to say their name because I am actually afraid of them, the very large local crew in your city?
I mean, definitely the latter because they're local to me.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Those who shall remain nameless, who you don't speak of.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. So, you know, and this one actually, I this tells you how often I unfortunately read punk news, but I didn't realize that we as a website had collectively decided to endorse Mikey Erg as a candidate for the new Against Me drummer.
Yeah.
Brian, why don't you take this one over? Because I'm not familiar. Maybe this was a Facebook conversation that I missed.
Okay. I'll give the readers a little bit of background. So John Gentile, who is a frequent contributor to this podcast, is he's very enthusiastic about everything. He's, you know, a super nice guy. He's obviously a very talented writer, and he knows his shit. But he also appreciates, you know, irreverence and whimsy in the same way that I think a lot of other punk news writers do, but don't necessarily show it as much. So he had this idea where after Jay Weinberg left Against Me a few months back, and Mikey Erg put out a tweet at Laura Jane Grey saying, like, basically, like, hey, I drum, you know, I'm available, whatever. Like, it probably wasn't serious, but then again, if Laura Jane had been like, okay, great, you're in the band, like, I'm sure it would have happened. So anyway, we came up with this, or he mostly came up with this, I should say, this idea to kind of, quote-unquote, endorse Mikey Urich as a candidate for the vacant drummer spot, and against me, the same way that publications will endorse, you know, presidential candidates, governor candidates, gubernatorial candidates, I should say, you know, and other politicians like that. And for some reason, we decided to go with it because it seemed like a good idea at the time. And this has the full endorsement of Mr. Urich, and we're actually going to be speaking with him, or John is, later this week. So we should have an interview for that as kind of a follow up pretty soon. Laura Jane Grace has posted this on her Facebook page as well as on her Twitter feed, the link to this petition, which last I checked had 700 signatures, and I'll check it right now to see if it has more. It has 722 supporters. So, yeah, this is obviously you know, not something that is super serious, and it's not something we're going to make a habit out of doing. But, you know, it's like we wanted to have some fun. You know, we get the winter doldrums just like everybody else, and we need something to kind of warm us up, if you will. And this has been really fun so far. So that's kind of how it happened, and apparently it's going to continue at least for a little bit.
All I gotta say is I love the Alex Pappas comment in here.
That's pretty great. That's like OG.
Yeah, I know.
Punknews.org comment referencing right there.
Yes,
so.
It is. Adam?
I'm super amused. Well, I'm amused by this in general, just because Against Me seems to be having treating it with pretty good humor themselves, and so is Mikey. So it's just kind of like everyone is having a laugh all the way around here. If anything happens from it, cool. Like, I'm not going to complain. That's awesome. But I don't think, you know, we're not taking ourselves too seriously with this one. And like, you know, God, it's, what is it? Winter still. It's just that we're just wasting bandwidth here.
Yeah.
And that's cool. I enjoy that some people try to take this really seriously. Like, it's a serious endeavor on our part that requires analysis online. I was reading a comment on Reddit here, and it was like, why exactly is a news website thinking it should endorse someone to fill an open slot in a band? Why would Punk News deserve any say in who the other guys in the band would want to drum with them? I was like, oh, for God's sakes.
Wait, literally completely missed the point.
We're not The Economist, or, you know, we're not like the BBC News Service, or, you know, Al Jazeera, or, you know, any kind of, you know, staffed, real, takes himself serious news site. We are, at the end, just a bunch of weirdos that write about, you know, bands that sing songs like She Broke My Dick. So, you know, we do things like this from time to time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there we go. I've been listening to a lot of All lately.
Well, yeah, speaking of bands that write songs about breaking dicks or whatever, we're going to move on and talk about Newfound Glory. I don't know if they've ever wrote any songs about breaking dicks, but they are going to put out another cover record. Now, this is a little different. They're doing it for Best Friends Day, Record Store Day. How many of those are there a year, by the way? It used to be one. Now there's like seven or something.
There's at least two. There's the original Record Store Day, which is always in April. And then there's like some like Black Friday thing that is sometime like later in the year, like around November.
Well,
and then I feel like there are other like various smaller events interspersed throughout the year, but I'm not really sure.
Record Store Day's on 420 this year, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're doing a Ramones cover record called Mania, and the cover of it, based off the picture we have received, looks like the cover of Rock and Roll High School.
Or is it the cover of Ramones Mania? Or is it both?
Well, Rock and Roll, that's right, Rock and Roll High School wasn't even a fucking album name. God, I'm terrible. I don't think it's, it's not the cover of Mania though, is it?
It's not the cover of Mania. It's the cover of it's the cover of
the movie Rock and Roll High School. Yeah, the movie. Yeah. Okay, I knew I was right with that. All right. So
well, excuse me.
Yeah. So I'll pass it off to you guys in a sec, but all I got to say is, you know, you're doing a record store day. I understand it, but guys, you have done a cover record. You used it. You're done. No more. You're cut off.
Who do they cover?
They did that whole fucking record of covers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they've done, they did one EP of covers, like, early on in their career, and then they did a full length of covers, like, much later on, and then they also did a 7-inch of like, hardcore covers sometime in between that. But, I mean, obviously this isn't for Chris Moran or, you know, anybody sure, whatever. But at the same time, you have to look at it from the perspective of, you know, a newfound Glory fan who might not be familiar with the Ramones or familiar with older punk bands checking this out or checking out some of the other covers they've done, thinking, hey, this is pretty great. Maybe I'll check out the Ramones or I'll check out Lifetime or I'll check out, you know, whomever. You know, that's kind of how I look at it. I mean, it's not something that's going to necessarily gain them new fans. It's kind of one of those things that's for new fans only or for current fans only. But, you know, it's kind of them paying homage to their roots, which they've been doing pretty much ever since they've been a band. It should be expected by now. And, yeah, I think this is fine. I don't have a problem with this. I mean, the Ramones, you know, as influential as they were basically a pop band with leather jackets and weird hair. And, you know, while Newfound Glory reside on kind of the other side of the pop-punk spectrum, I mean, they're not... I don't think they're as far apart as most people would like to believe they are.
You take that back.
I will not. I stand by it.
Adam!
Why does it sound like termites are eating one of your mics?
It's my brain boiling.
All right. So I got to get over my general ambivalence and mild distaste of Newfound Glory in general, I guess, to make any kind of comment on this that isn't snarky. I mean,
be snarky.
I mean, like, all right, there's a grand tradition of doing big, grandiose Ramones cover projects. So everyone, I'm just thinking back to that Queers record where they basically just like covered Rocket to Russia in its entirety.
Screeching Weasel did probably the most famous one.
Yeah, they did. Oh, yeah, okay.
Beat on the Bread.
Right. So they, you know, and you know what? Every time I see a band that totally you would not expect to cover a Ramones song, all of a sudden to just bust out a Ramones cover in the middle of a show, I am totally charmed by it every time. Seriously, I want it just to be like a mandatory part of every show I go to from now on, and someone just plays a Ramones song randomly. And I mean, but that's because I love the Ramones. And but because I love the Ramones, I probably don't want to hear Newfound Glory cover them. I mean, again, if you're a Newfound Glory fan, you know, this is cool, I guess. I don't want to hear it. There's so much other better Ramones related content, much of it by the Ramones actually, that you could be consuming, instead of this. So that's cool. But again, it's one of these weird little record store day release things. So it's not really music for people. It's a thing for people to buy and sell on eBay once our currency collapses, so the new economy will be based on things like this. So, you know, one day when you're starving and, you know, you're traveling through the wastelands and you really, really want to trade something to get like a goat, this is the kind of thing that you could probably trade for a goat in our new vinyl-based post-apocalyptic.
So you're telling me preppers should doomsday preppers should be buying copies of this.
Oh god, doomsday preppers have like vaults full of record store day releases.
Yes.
Well, you know, my whole thing, and don't get me wrong, I think Chad Gilbert's a stand-up guy. I like the fact that, you know, he's found a way to do what he wants, making a shit ton of money, and he still, you know, does respect his where he comes from. I just hate the goddamn singer's voice. God! It's like nails on a chalkboard. It's worse than the dude from Coheed and Cambria. It really is. And it's like, How can you be in your 30s and sing like that?
Well, I mean, he was an adult when they started the band. I mean, does the voices change that much when you – I feel like I have the same voice that I had when I was, you know.
How can you 20? Be a 25-year-old and sing like that? Whatever. I mean, it's the nasally thing, it to me, is like nails on a chalkboard. I just want to rip my hair out when I hear it.
Well, I mean, for the most part, it doesn't really exist anymore. Like, Newfound Glory are the only band that are still doing it that are relevant. Yeah. So
they haven't caught on yet. I don't know. Saves the Day pop up every now and then.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Although I feel like they've gotten more nasally as they've gone on. They weren't very nasally early on.
Yeah.
Why are you guys being mean? And I was trying not to be mean. I'm going to be mean. Yeah, yes! I hate this guy's voice. I can't fucking stand his voice. I never have. I've never really understood why people really like anything about this band, only because of, oh God, Chad's voice. Sorry. It just, it's nasally and high pitched and whiny to me in the worst possible way. And this is,
well, no, Adam, someone... Chad's not the singer though. Chad's like the
okay. Chad's not the singer.
He's
the
dude
fuck
who,
is.
He's
I don't
the
even
dude
know
who
they
in,
are.
He was in, what's that band? The really good hardcore band. Yeah. He was in that.
He was in Shylude. Who's the singer in this?
I don't know. We'll call him Nasal.
Nasal. I can't stand Nasal. He's probably a nice guy. I'd probably have a beer with him, but I don't want to hear him sing anything. So there. Now
yes.
I've been. Yes.
All right, Adam. Well, tell you what. Why don't you tell us something that you'd like to hear? I know you got a song, right?
Yeah. Okay. I guess I do. I can do this. All right, so this is a song. The song I'm going to play for you is called 53 Degrees. It is from a band called Brutal Youth. They are from, well, originally from Newfoundland, which is an island that we have up here in Canada. They were the last province to join Confederation. I don't know if you knew that, Brian. But anyways.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so... Brutal Youth originally from Newfoundland. They now moved to Toronto, and they are operate out of there. So they have a record coming out. The record is called Stay Honest. It's coming out on a joint release sort of deal between Guelph Ontario's My Fingers My Brain Records. There's a Ramones reference for you, and Get Party Records. So the record's coming out on April 2nd. It is called Stay Honest. You should check it out. We're streaming a bunch of the songs on Punk News right now. So this is Stay Honest by Brutal... Or sorry, this is 53 Degrees from Stay Honest from Brutal Youth.
Podcast again, Chris Moran, Brian Yancey, Adam White, coming back to you.
Let's go.
Let's go. All right. So last week, without me, you guys talked about the Bad Religion tour and how Against Me had dropped off of it, and now we just
because they haven't hired Mikey Erg yet.
That's right. If Mikey Erg was there, oh, you're not missing a show with Mikey Erg there. Let me tell
absolutely
you.
Absolutely not.
But they've found a pretty good replacement. The Bronx are going to be joining in Against Me's place, who I think it's this actually, you know, and don't I love Against Me, love Laura, but this actually has me wanting to go to the show a little more now. Because the Bronx New Record is fucking amazing, and, you know, they're all their catalog is, so, yeah. Any comments, guys?
Yeah, this is cool. I'm excited for the show. I mean, I was disappointed when Against Me dropped, but I feel like the Bronx are a suitable replacement. I've actually never seen them live.
What?
And I don't feel like they tour very much, at least outside of like California and maybe New York. So this is going to be cool. And I agree that the new record is awesome. If you haven't listened to it yet, you definitely should, because it rocks pretty hard, dudes. And yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I think it's cool. I think it's weird that they were available for this tour. I kind of want to know the story behind that. Like their record just came out, and you know, this tour is starting in a couple of weeks. You know, not even. And they're like, we'll do the tour. We're just sitting at home. We're not busy. Like, really?
They looked like they were prepping for some El Mariachi Bronx dates, because I noticed they have some of those coming up, and it's like, that's pretty fucking awesome. Your main project puts out a really good record, and you're like, we want to do some more of our mariachi band record, our tour dates.
Well, I mean, in their, I guess, defense, for lack of a better term, I feel like the mariachi thing is probably a better draw at shows than the regular Bronx.
I would shit my pants laughing if, at least for one show on this Bad Religion tour, if they came out and did a mariachi Bronx set.
Oh, I hope it's the Philly date, because I'll be there. And
that would be phenomenal.
That would be amazing. They should totally do it.
Adam, any Bronx comments?
Everything I had in my head that I wanted to say, Brian just said, to a degree that is sort of creeping me out.
it's like you and I have been on a few of these together.
Yeah, like the whole like, why are they playing this tour? Were they not previously committed, given that they had a record coming out? / the Bronx are a pretty good substitute for Against Me. Yeah, I'm just gonna just sit back and coast on this one, because
yeah,
all right,
sorry, not sorry for nailing it.
Moving on. I can't believe, God, it has been freaking 10 years since Rise Against Revolutions Per Minute came out.
Yeah, you feel old, buddy?
Holy shit. I remember telling friends of mine about how amazing this record was going to be. And I think collectively as the org, Brian, Adam, we can... I mean, I feel comfortable saying that we had a little bit, and Scott Heise will say this too, we had a little something to do with kind of giving Rise Against a little bit of a push. And it was due to this record.
Yeah.
Everyone here fucking loved this record. It's still, in my opinion, their best record they've ever released. But anyway, so Fat Wreck is going to be putting out a deluxe edition of Revolutions Per Minute. It's going to feature 10 demos recorded along with the record, as well as some additional packaging crap. It was good. And then, you know, you had Siren Song of the Counterculture, which was Suffer and the Witness, which is really good. And then the rest has been shit. So
I'm actually excited for this. If they're going to be releasing it on vinyl and kind of making it into like a really nice package.
Yeah.
I will definitely be picking it up, because you know, it was a really important record to me when it came out. And, you know, while I haven't really kept up with what Rise Against has been doing in the last, you know, half decade or so, you know, they're still, I would say they have 4 really good albums in their catalog, which is way more than most bands have. So, and with this one being the best, and, you know, this was a big album when I was, you know, 18. So
to put it to our listeners mildly, let me tell you how Rise Against used to be, because I remember going, I'd seen them twice before, but this was a week before this record came out, Revolutions Per Minute, and I knew they were going to play some songs from it, so I drove like an hour to see them play on the, at the time it was one of those Fat Wreck tours. I don't know if it was the official Fat Wreck tour, but it was a Fat Wreck tour. And they were opening for the Real McKenzies and the Mad Caddies. just put that into perspective. So, yeah, Brian, I agree 100%. This record is like one of those ones that, like, you know, you forget to listen to for a few months, and then you get excited when, like, you come across it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Adam?
I think that understanding how important this record was at the time when it came out really requires one to ignore kind of everything that's happened with Rise Against since. And I don't mean that to be insulting to the band. It's that this was, you know, when it came out and this was just a band on fat and they released this record that was just, you know, very well balanced kind of punk hardcore mix that hit kind of the political notes that it needed to, that, you know, still had a huge amount of mass appeal that didn't sound really like anything else that Fat had put out. And even though they had that prior record that they released at the Unraveling, that this one had enough going on about it that it made people stand up and take notice where they may have just ignored the band before. Like, this was a hugely important record in the, I guess, the 2000s, you know, world of punk music. And, well, yeah, Rise Against has since, you know, they went to the major label and they released a bunch of stuff that's really commercial and da 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 da. That doesn't really take away from the fact that, yeah, this was just a huge release when it came out. And there was pretty universal goodwill that it seemed like they were getting from everyone at the time. And I would imagine that a lot of people that nowadays, and myself, I guess I'm guilty of this almost, you know, really wouldn't give this band the time of day, were quite smitten with this when it came out. So it is a worthy record to hold up and to say, you know, this was a good thing. Now, that said, do I have any record where the 10 bonus demo tracks that we found on the floor that we've tacked on after the good stuff has ever really been worth it? No. And I say that for bands that I love. No, none of that stuff has ever really been worth it. But, you know, if you want it and you like buying fancy packaged things, then this is something you can buy.
Now, this would be worth it if, and I can't pronounce the name of that fucking song, but the one that was on that oil comp, Guess the Stoffamoline, or whatever the fuck it was. If that is on here, it's worth it.
Yeah, it's kind of curious that they haven't kind of put out some sort of like B-sides compilation, because they have a bunch of really good ones that don't really exist anywhere else, that one included.
I'm not thinking B-sides, I'm thinking like, here's a really weirdly, you know, mixed, you know,
here's the good version of a song, and here's the half version. Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah.
Do you guys now? Do either of you guys have the Transistor demo one?
No.
I think it was actually the demos for the Unraveling, and it's not bad. Yeah.
I mean, I remember hearing Join the Ranks, that demo on that. I can't remember which Fat Cop it was on, but whichever one had that was completely unreleased, previously unreleased songs.
Right.
And I think that song was on that demo, and then it was after they had changed their name to Rise Against. But that was the first time I heard the band, and I thought it was cool, but, you know, nothing to write home about. And then this record came out, and it just kind of blew me away. I mean, and it's kind of crazy to think about it now, but like, we have, since this record came out, it kind of jump started this whole like subgenre of like melodic hardcore bands. I mean, like, these bands didn't really exist before this record came out, for the most part. I mean, I guess like Strike Anywhere did, but for the most part, these other bands just kind of came out and more or less were influenced by this record. So I think when gauging its importance, that's an important factor to consider.
Well, here's, you know, just another fascinating part of this is that, at least to me, when, you know, when Rise Against signed to a major, I mean, you had a lot of bands that were going to majors. You had, you had Anti-Flag going to a major. You had, I think this was around the same time that Suicide Machines were still on a major. Well, they were really always
Rancid.
Yeah. So, but the thing was, Rise Against was one of the bands, I mean, that I really, truly at first thought that, you know, they had a lot of mass appeal, but I couldn't see them doing well in a major. It was just, they're too aggressive. People aren't ready for this type of thing. And by far, they have done the best of any of those fucking bands.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were playing arenas like last year, headlining them. So it's crazy to think about, but yeah, this I'm excited for this. This should be good. I mean, I feel like Thad does a pretty good job with these reissues when it comes to like the packaging and, you know, how they kind of present things. So I expect this to be the same.
And it doesn't require any remastering or anything. That record is mastered and mixed brilliantly. Don't fucking touch it. yeah. All right. So last story, and this is a bit of a minor note, but still pretty cool for I'm sure a lot of folks who are into Strung Out. Strung Out will be putting out a box set. This has kind of been done with other bands as of recently. Lagwagon, of course, with their box set. They're going to be putting out it's going to be – I'm going to just give you some of the details on it. It's a box set titled Volume 1. It's going to feature some remix and remastered versions of Another Day in Paradise, Suburban Teenage Wasteland Blues, and Twisted by Design. I can totally get behind remixing, remastering Another Day in Paradise and Suburban Teenage Wasteland Blues. Twisted by Design is a really good recording. It's a really good sounding record. And
I agree.
I think Ryan Green might have done it, but you know what? You guys know how I feel about Ryan Green. I like him. Sorry, Mitch Clem. I like Ryan Green. Write a comic about it again. You guys have any thoughts on this little collection?
I mean, I was never a huge Strung Out fan, but it's, you know, it's cool for the fans. I kind of enjoy / feel old when I see that that Fat is putting out box sets for all these punk bands that I kind of grew up on. But you know, it's like you said, those first two records could stand to be touched up a little bit. I think Twisted by Design sounds pretty good for the most part, but maybe they can sound a bit, maybe they can make it sound better. I really have no idea, but sure, why not?
You know, I did the review for Top Contenders, which is, I guess, sort of the inspiration for this thing, which is a hits record, if you will, but they totally did a remix, remaster of the songs on there. And the songs on there sound fucking phenomenal. I mean, the mix is amazing. It's the way, and I think I said this in the review, but it's the way a release like that should be done, to not just, you know, do a money grab where you're actually making an effort to put out a better product, emphasizing on the band's accomplishments. So if it's anything like that, I mean, I think this is a really good idea, and maybe they're taking the positive feedback to do this.
Yeah.
Adam, anything on Strung Out?
I respect Strung Out a lot. They've never been a band that I was into, and they're a weird band for me because I know there are fanatics, like complete Strung Out fanatics out there.
Oh yeah.
But I've never met one. Like
they all live at the beach, dude. They all
I believe that they exist, and I believe that there's a lot of them, but the circumstances of my life were that I have never actually spoken to one, as far as I know.
You know,
and it's sort of weird for me. It's like, I guess, like, I'm the same way. Like, you know, I've never been to, like, you know, Kentucky. I believe that it exists, but I couldn't tell you anything about it. It's that sort of thing with Strung Out.
I've always been a Strung Out fan, not like a Strung Out fan. But
yes.
But I last year was the first time I ever saw them live. I had, for one reason or another, either missed them when they were playing somewhere or what have you. First time I ever saw them live. And it was because they were opening for Face to Face, which I've made no secret about on this show. I am a huge Face to Face fan. But they were great live, and I've always heard they put on a really good show, but I mean, they are performers. By far, and I mean that in a good way. I mean they go to put on a show. They are professional musicians in the most respectable sense of the of that statement.
No, I totally agree. I've only seen them once, and I want to was opening for Dropkick Murphys a couple years ago, which was a weird vibe in that room for sure. yeah, they were awesome. I mean, you know, like you said, like, they put on a great show. They're very, like, enthusiastic. You know, they move around the stage a lot, you know, which when you go see, like, an older punk band, you don't really expect to see that. You kind of expect to see, like, I don't know, like, older guys just kind of like standing there. Like, I guess I've seen like Social D play live too many times recently to where that's kind of what I expect when I'm going to go see an older punk band play live. So, but yeah, they were great live. I would absolutely go see them again anytime.
Good. All right. Well, I guess we got another song to play, and then I'll wrap this sucker up. Brian, you wanna send us out here with your jam?
I do, and I send it out with a bit of sad news. Is that this band Comadre, this week they announced that their upcoming tour of the West Coast will likely be their last tour for the foreseeable future. So basically, they're breaking up. And it's kind of unfortunate because in January they released a really, really great self-titled full-length album. The band kind of worked on this album for a few years. They tinkered with it. They're kind of perfectionists in that respect. Jack Shirley, who was in the band, is also the owner of the Atomic Garden Studio in California and has produced records from – he produced the Last Joyce Manor record. He's done a bunch of other really cool stuff. And this record to me kind of takes the idea and the sounds of hardcore punk and kind of pushes it, you know, to boundaries that I really haven't heard before. And it's just really phenomenal. And, you know, the musicianship and songwriting is really great. And, you know, while it's sad, it could also be argued that there's probably not a higher note they could possibly go out on than this record. And so if you haven't checked it out yet, you should definitely do that. The band are selling it on their Bandcamp page for $5, which is comadre.bandcamp.com. This is the lead single from the record. It's called Cold Rain. And actually, this is available as a Name Your Price download also on their Bandcamp page, along with two other songs that did not make the album. So that's definitely worth checking out if you're unfamiliar with the band. Literally doesn't cost you anything. If you don't want to pay, you don't have to pay. You can just download these three songs for free. And hopefully after that, you'll be enticed to throw down $5 for the record because it's more than worth it. So this is Comadre, and the name of this song is Cold Rain.
Going to do it for this week's Punk News Podcast. Again, I want to thank Brian and Adam for joining us on the roundtable. Also want to thank all the bands that contributed music to this week's show. I want to thank Nariman for doing the editing and all-around magic and tuning up for this thing to make it available for you to listen to right now. We also want to thank Scotty and the folks at Death to False Hope for doing our theme music. And, of course, thank you for downloading, listening, and hopefully coming back to check us next week. If you want to provide us with feedback, hit us up via email, podcast@punknews.org. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Vimeo, or you can just leave comments and snarky remarks on punknews.org. That'll do it. Thanks again. See you next week.